Welcome to Comic Talk Today for Monday, June 25th, 2018. And yes, this is the episode of the week I like to call Top of the Pile, in which I talk about some of my favorite reads from this past New Comic Book Day. And on this episode, I have six books. There's going to be one Marvel, one DC, one Aspen, one Aftershock, one Action Lab, and one Image Comic. And of course, at the end, I'm going to do an extra pick because I read a pretty interesting book, and I'm going to shout out some people when I do that. But let's kick things off by talking about Tony Stark Iron Man number one. This is written by Dan Slott, fresh off a 10-plus year run on Spider-Man, art by Valerio Scitti, colors by Edgar Delgado, and letters by Joe Caramagna. And I gotta say, I've been in and out of the whole Iron Man thing for a while. I know Bendis was doing the book for a very long time. A lot of people really love the book. And I was very curious to see how Dan Slott would handle this new character after having been handled with the same creative for a long time. And I gotta say, I was pretty impressed with this first issue. It actually read a lot like a Spider-Man book to me. And that's a little weird, but it makes sense with Dan Slott being the writer on the book. And I did like how meta the issue was. And I haven't seen anybody talking about this. Of course, I don't really read reviews or anything like that. But I do like to follow what my friends are saying about the book. And I haven't seen a whole lot of people talking about it. But I thought it was pretty enjoyable. And the reason that it's meta is that there's a new character introduced in this issue that to me seems to be like a comic book version of Dan Slott. In fact, I didn't really catch it throughout the issue, but once we get to the last page and we see this whole Team Iron Man thing that pops up, I'll get to that in a second, the image of this guy looks exactly like Dan Slott. Exactly like Dan Slott. The guy's name is Bang. And when the way the issue kicks off is in the past, 25 years ago, there is a robot competition. Kind of like that, what was that show called? Robot Wars, maybe, or something like that, where people like made robots to fight each other in a ring. It's kind of like that, except this is this robot competition, the people make robots to play a soccer game, which of course makes perfect sense because right now it's the World Cup. So I think soccer is probably in a lot of people's minds. Maybe not everybody, at least not here in the U.S. because soccer is not as popular. But it was a really interesting introduction to get to know these characters, get to know a little bit about Tony Stark, and see how he's kind of been the same douchey guy for all these years. Then we flash forward 25 years later. This guy is kind of living out of his garage. He's still working on his robots, but he's kind of down on his luck. And of course, Tony Stark is the richest man in the world. And he comes to Bang to enlist his help because he has created some kind of way for artificial intelligence to communicate with each other. He manages to have robots talk to each other and work as a team, which is something that Tony Stark can't quite figure out. And the way that whole thing works out was a little weird to me because, I mean, this guy had figured it out 25 years ago. Why is it that Tony hadn't figured it out? And why did it take Tony 25 years to actually do it? And part of the reason for that is that Tony has created these like nano Iron Man things that play a key part in the issue later on when Fing Fang Foom shows up and attacks New York City. And I really dug that. I love Fing Fang Foom. He's been, of course, part of Iron Man history for a very long time, since the 60s. And so it made perfect sense to have him as a villain here. Except this is not your normal Fing Fang Foom because he's being mind controlled by some secret person or organization. And wants to attack Tony Stark. There's all these hacks going on at Stark Unlimited. And Tony wants to figure out what's going on. The one thing I gotta say about this issue is, while I'm not a huge Iron Man fan, this issue read so quickly. It is literally nonstop, always something happening in every single panel. And I don't think I've seen that from a Marvel book in quite a long time. It's literally nonstop from beginning to end. There's like monsters popping in, there's hacks going on, there's new characters introduced. For example, Jakarta Pym shows up on here, the Bride of Ultron. And she works for Tony Stark, and it was pretty cool because she is a liaison at Stark Unlimited, and she is in charge of like robotics ethics. So whenever Tony creates some kind of AI, she's responsible for making sure that everybody crosses out their T's and dots their I's, and everything's done ethically because these are sentient beings. And that's actually really interesting in the world that we're living today. As more and more AI, we see, you know, people concerned about data privacy and this and the other. Jakarta is kind of the being in charge of making sure that the robots aren't taken advantage of by humans, and that humans and robots can coexist with this new technology. I thought that was pretty interesting. And she obviously plays a key role throughout the entire issue because she's kind of the person that Bang reports to while he's working at Stark Industries. And I really dug it. It's kind of like when he shows up at Stark Industries, it's kind of like a future world thing, right? Everything's super technologically advanced. And Tony really plays he's got a lot of new Iron Man toys to play with. And that plays kind of a key thing at the end of the issue, because after Tony saves New York from Fing Fang Foom, he has a press conference. And the journalists are asking him, like, is this the new status quo for Iron Man? Like, are all these new suits a new thing? And he's like, listen, I'm Iron Man, dude. Like, we're all Iron Man. He's like, it's not just me. I have this whole team working with me at Stark Unlimited. Like, we are Iron Man. It's not just about me. And I thought that was really interesting and kind of sets up what this series will be going forward, right? Every time you have a new writer taking over a book, there's always people that are like, oh, well, you know, this guy did all this stuff and did so well, and I love this issue, and everything, the whole run was perfect. And of course, a lot of times those people forget that no run is perfect. I mean, there's some really amazing runs, and I gotta say, Bendis did a fantastic job on Iron Man, but nothing's perfect. There's always kind of that lull issue, right? It's almost like each new writer, when they enter a new book, especially if they've been run by the same creator for a long time, they almost have to prove themselves. And to me, what Dan Slott is saying here is like, look, I don't care what you thought about Bendis' stuff. Like, that's its own thing. I'm doing my own thing and just kind of learn to deal with it. You know, I'm going to have fun. I hope you have fun along for the ride. And I like that, right? Not a lot of writers have the balls to do that. And of course, not a lot of writers have the, I guess, maybe expertise to say that kind of thing, right? Dan Slott was in Spider-Man for 10 plus years. So he's a recognized writer. He can do these kind of things. You know, if somebody brand new came in and said, look, I don't care what you guys thought about this other thing, I'm doing my own thing, it might not work very well, right? I think in particular at Marvel, where they're bringing in a lot of talent from indie books to take over the titles and bring them into the new directions. You know, some people are kind of wary of that. And these guys have to prove themselves. And I think for me, Dan Slott's saying, look, I don't care. I'm going to have fun doing this. I've wanted to do Iron Man for a long time. This is kind of where we're going to start off. Come back on the next issue and tell me what you think. See if you still enjoy it. You know, because we're going to do new and crazy things. And this is not Bendis' Iron Man. This is Dan Slott's Iron Man. Let's have fun. This book is for all of us. And I really dug that. I really dug that. It was so meta. And, you know, not something that we generally see out of these books. Overall, I really dug Iron Man number one. I thought the art was fantastic. It like I said, it definitely reads a lot like a Spider-Man book. And I know there's been some comparisons between Tony and Peter Parker lately because, you know, like in Spider-Man, Peter had the Parker Industries and he really seemed a lot like Tony had been over the years when Bendis went in a different direction and made him a little bit darker and somber. But I really dug this direction. This is a self-contained story, this first issue. So I don't think we'll really see what Dan Slott wants to do with this book until the next issue comes in and maybe we get a couple of stories on what this new arc is going to be about. But I like the fact that Tony's got a team. He's creating these new crazy things. Like he has like a kaiju Iron Man suit that he uses to fight Fing Fang Foom. That was cool. He sends these nano Iron Man bot things that he controls remotely into Fing Fang Foom's bloodstream and gets attacked by his immune system. I thought that was interesting. So really cool, really good ideas. I like where this is going. But again, I'm not going to know exactly what this book is about, probably for another issue or two at least. And I like that. I like that. I like a fresh new status quo with a character that a lot of people really like that has become really popular because of the Avengers films. So overall, really enjoyed it. Art's beautiful. And I'm going to give Tony Stark Iron Man number one a 4 out of 5. Let's go into a book that I'm going to just go ahead and say straight out, 5 out of 5. And of course, you can probably assume and guess correctly that that book is The Wildstorm, number 14, written by Warren Ellis with art by John Davies Hunt. And this introduces a new character in Alexandra Fairchild. And I was talking to my buddy Ronnie from the DC podcast, the Absolute DC podcast from Aftershock Central podcast and a bunch of other stuff. He had a couple questions about this because, you know, I think Ronnie read some of the stuff back in the day. And those of you that read Wildstorm books back in the day may remember Fairchild from the Gen 13 series. And the character design for this new Fairchild is very similar to that. Of course, a little bit older, but this is not the same Fairchild. Okay, in Gen 13, we had Caitlin Fairchild. This is Alexandra Fairchild. And for those of you that may remember some of those books, there was an Alex Fairchild in Team 7, which I like the connection, right? Because in the last issue, we saw Backlash in Kraven talking about some stuff related to Team 7. They have a different name for it here. They call it Project Thunderbook. But we do see that connection. Fairchild here is not Caitlin from Gen 13, but Alex, who in the original would be Caitlin's dad. Except here, it's Caitlin's mom. And I like that, right? It brought in a new, fresh perspective. And I like how they keep on diving into the effect that this Project Thunderbook had on these characters. Because as we saw with Backlash in the last issue, he's pretty much become a serial killer. Alex, on the other hand, does not do that, right? The implant that she has from her days in Project Thunderbook does give her some issues with anger management, as we saw with Backlash. But she can kind of control it a little bit more. Although she still does feed off of the anger. And so we learn that she's kind of living in this remote town in the middle of the desert. She's a mechanic, and she does work for the town that's nearby. And there's a gang in the town that she kind of starts egging on to get some reaction to feed her anger and feed her implant. And as the book progresses, we learn she killed the gang, the mother of this gang. I guess it's a family-run gang. And they were coming in after her. So she was preparing herself to fight these guys and ends up blowing them up. Really cool how that all was done. I wish we would have seen more, but it did serve to introduce Caitlin, which of course we old-time Wildstorm fans know from Gen 13. And of course Kraven is going to be going after Caitlin, find her for whatever reason, whatever he is trying to do, to gather these beings together. And, there's a couple other things that have been touched upon in other issues, like for example, the IO and Skywatch rivalry. We do see that get explained a little bit more, and I like the interaction. I'm not going to spoil it because it was really well done. We do get to see some other characters come in, for example, Authority and Planetary characters, and I'm not going to spoil that. But I will say there is one character that I really love. Jack Hawksmoor shows up in this issue, and the way that he's handled is really interesting, and that's about all I'm going to say with it. But thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it. This is one of those books where I think if you are unfamiliar with the characters, you may not get as much out of it as I'm getting out of it. But for longtime fans of these characters who have been following the Wildstorm series from the beginning, I think this book is absolutely brilliant. And the stuff that Warren Ellis is doing with these characters is fresh and new and convincing and works really well with this fresh new take. This corporate espionage thing with superhero characters in the background. It works really well. And I thought it was interesting that a lot of the characters that we have seen in the previous 13 issues don't show up on here. Aside from Zealot, that's about it, right? There's no Grifter, no Voodoo, none of that stuff. And I think it worked very well for the type of story that this issue told. It is self-contained, but it does reference a lot of the stuff that's been going on. So if you are brand new to the series, I don't recommend you come into this issue. You might want to go back an issue or two in order to get some of the information you might need to understand this. But really, I'm surprised this book is still around. I hope it does come through to the end. You know, we're more than halfway through right now, which is great. I really hope we get to see this book fulfill the promise of the 24 issues, because it's been absolutely brilliant, and I can't wait to read this book every single month. Again, that's the Wildstorm number 14 from DC Comics. That's going to be a 5 out of 5. Let's go on over to Aspen Comics, and that is Michael Turner's Fathom, Volume 7, Number 1. This is written by Ron Mars, with pencils by Sia colors by Peter Stegelgard, and letters by Zen. And I have not been reading a whole lot of Aspen. In fact, not much Aspen at all. I read the Awaken the Skies 0 issue, I think that was last week or 2 weeks ago, and I didn't talk about it on the podcast because it's very much a 0 issue. It's very short, not a lot of meat and bones to it. I will probably be talking about it when issue 1 comes out. But Fathom's been around for forever. I think Fathom came out in like 97, 98. In fact, Nick and I were talking about it. I don't know if it was when he showed up on the podcast last week or if it was in one of the episodes we discussed for the Nerdy Legion podcast. We kind of recorded a bunch of things at once. Fathom was one of those books. It was like the top-selling indie book of all time at one point. And it seems like that's going to be changing. Over the years, there's been so many new creative teams kind of. This whole phase of comics kind of went by the wayside, right? Fathom came out when lead female characters were really popular, so you had like really beautiful, scantily clad women as the central character of a book. And when Fathom came out, I thought it was great. They did some weird stuff that was popular at the time too, like the Fathom Swimsuit Special. I know Image had some of those. And, you know, I read most of volume one, but I kind of fell by the wayside on that. It just, not something that interested me for quite a long time. But, you know, we are seeing a lot of these 90s characters being resurrected and being told with, you know, fresh new perspectives. We talked about Wildstorm just now. Of course, there's books like Witchblade over at Top Cow. That's a fantastic take. Really, really completely different from the original. And now we have Fathom. And, you know, Ron Mars is writing it. A person who I admire and I enjoy a lot of his work. And, you know, he's got a tough job with this new volume of Fathom because he needs to be able to introduce what this world is about, who these characters are in this one issue so he can really tell his story. So Fathom number one really serves as an introduction. We meet Fathom, we meet her best friend, we meet Finn, her brother. We learn that Fathom kind of works for the government and there's competing government agencies trying to get the power of these beings because Fathom is descendant from a long line of like sea people, right? Kind of like Atlantis, sort of. As a result, you know, some of it does read very much like an introduction. And I think for some people that may be off-putting, but, you know, if you want to make a good introduction to people that have never picked this up, then I think Fathom number one does a really good job at doing that because you really do get to learn who everybody is, what their power sets are, and what the kind of the central plot of the story is going to be for these eight issues. Basically, Fathom's brother Finn gets kidnapped because there's this agency that wants to learn about the powers and how to control them and use them for their own advantage. Fathom sees that the government isn't really able to help her and protect her and her family, so she goes after this group to try to rescue her brother. Pretty straightforward story. But I really dug it. I thought it worked well. And the art is absolutely beautiful. I've seen Sia Oom's stuff in other books, and I can't remember what I've seen it in. But it is absolutely beautiful. And it really fits with the look and feel of Fathom for a long time. It's always been a very similar art style. Of course, Michael Turner began this. And in many ways, the art style is very similar to Michael Turner's. And I like that because it's very clean and polished. And it worked out very well for me. So Fathom number one from Aspen Labs, or from Aspen Comics, excuse me, is a fantastic introduction. I'm gonna be sticking through the rest of the series, and I hope it pays off for me. I'm gonna give this one a 3.5 out of 5. Thoroughly enjoyed it. I recommend you pick it up if you are looking to try something new and different, because I'm sure you probably haven't read an Aspen book in a long time, if ever. Let's go from there to The Lost City Explorers number one. This is an Aftershock book with written by Zach Kaplan with art by Alvaro Saraceca. And I talked about this book in depth when we recorded the Aftershock Central podcast last week with Ronnie and Travis. And we all really love the book. It is very different from other stuff that I'm reading. In many respects, it reads a lot like the, you know, if you turn the Goonies into a comic book, it's almost like that. If the Goonies were a little bit older, this is kind of what it would be. Another thing that we compare it to maybe is like Cult Classic over at, who does that? Vault Comics. And except that one I think is leaning more towards a little bit horror. This is more sci-fi slash folklore. There is a historian who is doing an archaeological dig and finds this lost city underneath the city of Manhattan, or the city of New York under Manhattan. He works for this company who may or may not have his best interest in mind. He disappears, and then we meet his kids and their friends. And, of course, they end up deciding that they're going to try to figure out what the hell happened to their dad. Because, as it turns out, their dad is not dead, even though they had a funeral for him. He has just simply disappeared. And I loved everything about this. The art is beautiful. The story is great. It's fresh. It's unique. There's some really cool ideas that are played with. And, of course, I love ancient stuff, right? I'm not one of those guys that think like Atlantis was a real thing, right? I obviously think it's a story, but a really interesting story that has a lot to say about human culture and human beings in general. And, so I've always loved that kind of stuff. And I love reading about these kind of lost cities, right? Like the city of Mu or Lemuria. What are some other ones? Sibella. Like there's a bunch of these cities. And I dug it. I dug it. I think Zach does a fantastic job at establishing this whole world extremely quickly and really making you feel like you should care about all of these characters. And that's tough to do in just one issue, but I think it's done superbly. So I highly, highly recommend you pick this book up. I know I've talked about it a lot over the last week, and there's quite a few of you that have already picked this book up because of my recommendation, and it's absolutely brilliant. This is a mini-series, but, you know, Aftershock really does a good job at curating really strong titles that tell really compelling stories, and I think so far this year, this may be one of the best books that they've put out, and I can't wait to read the rest of it. Lost City Explorers number 1 from Aftershock Comics, for me, is going to be a 5 out of 5. I cannot wait to see how the rest of this goes. From there, let's go on to Action Lab Danger Zone. This is Ruin of Thieves, a Brigand story number 2. And I did not know this was coming out, but I saw this in a solicited, and I was like, oh, that looks interesting. I read it, really dug it, and I went back and read the first issue and then reread issue 2. And this is, how do I want to describe it? There's a lot going on in this book. It is sort of a sword and sorcery story. There's not so much fantasy. This is kind of like a Game of Thrones type thing, right? It's sort of like an alternate Middle Ages world. This is not set on Earth. It's a different place. But there are a lot of factions vying for power in this place. So in that sense, it's very much like Game of Thrones, right? So there's a lot of political intrigue and a lot of like armies going up against other armies, tons of action, tons of violence, and, you know, and a lot of really compelling characters. So the issue I want to talk about is issue 2. I do recommend you read issue 1 first, although I got to say issue 2 is almost self-contained. There are some things referenced from issue 1, but a lot of issue 2 tells the story of Waheda, who is one of these warrior women, and kind of her story of how she got to the place where she's at. So we learn a lot about her history as a child, how she was kidnapped and her separated from her family, raised by this group of warriors. We learn about the tattoos that are on her body and why she hides some of them and why she doesn't hide the rest and why she has kept some. So she has tattoos all over her body because she was a slave, and these are slave tattoos. But when she had most of them removed, she kept the ones on her face in case she ever was reunited with her mom, because that way, you know, 20, 30 years later, her mom would still recognize her by these tattoos. And I thought that was a really touching moment. This is, by the way, written by Ram V. The art is Sumit Kumar, colors by Rosh, and letters by Aditya Bidikar. And I'm not familiar with this creative team, but I really loved it. The art is absolutely perfect for this. It's not quite scratchy. A lot of it is very polished. It almost reminds me of, Ether, the Matt Kent book. The art style is very similar to that, and it works so well for this world. There's a lot of, like, we'll get to this when I talk about the next issue, a lot of stuff like fight scenes on ships and like piratey type stuff that I really love. It works really well. This issue was really, really compelling, and it got me wanting more. So of course I read the first one, and I'm definitely putting this on my list. This is not something that was on my radar, and I'm sure some of you may have told me about this book. Ronnie, for example, to you, I'll apologize ahead of time if you recommended this to me at some point. I know I talk about books sometimes, and Ronnie's like, dude, I told you about that like 6 months ago. Sorry, Ronnie. If I don't remember, I don't remember. But Ruin of Thieves, really, really solid book. Again, the second issue was very emotional, and I really enjoyed it. I recommend you pick up Ruin of Thieves from Action Lab. I think this will appeal to a large group of people, in particular if you want to try something that's different from the typical genre of stuff that people read, like superhero stuff or, you know, whatever. Really, really nice. Really well done. It's not what I will call a slice of life. I'm going to coin the term comic veritas for the podcast. I think I may have mentioned this before. I like that a little bit better. But it works really well in this sword and sorcery setting. And I want to see some more sorcery. Some more sorcery. I think in issue 1, there was maybe like one guy that created fire from his hands so they could walk through a cave. That's really the only magic we see. This is really a book about people and this crazy violent world that they live in, and the types of situations that people end up putting themselves in as a result of wanting to achieve more power. Of course, in the background, there's this comet that crashed on Earth in the first issue that plays a big role in how society has been changed, because there's people vying for power from something that fell in this comet. And of course, I want to learn more about the comet and the rest of the world. The political intrigue is really great in this book. So Ruin of Thieves, number 2, a Brigand story, number 2, is going to receive a 4 out of 5 from me. I'm gonna start checking out some more Action Lab stuff too, by the way, because I've noticed there's a couple books that I've really, really dug, like Spencer and Locke I talked about a few weeks ago, for example. Absolutely brilliant book. You know, maybe Action Lab is something that I need to be watching out for. Usually when I think of Action Lab, I think of like Zombie Tramp, which I enjoy reading. It's a fun book, but definitely not for a lot of people. This I think is a special book that you should be checking out. Finally, let's talk about Shanghai Red number 1 from Image Comics. This is written by Chris Sabella with art by Josh Hickson and letters by Hassan Osmani Alho. And I really love this book. I was very surprised because just like I said with Rune of Thieves, this is almost like one of these comic veritas type stories, right? It's quote unquote slice of life. That's the last time I'm going to use this term on this podcast because I freaking hate the damn term. Comic veritas is a great term, though. The story takes place, I'm assuming, in the late 1700s. I don't think there is an actual date placed on this. But based on the fact that it's Shanghai Red, I'm going to say late 1700s. You know what? It might even be later. Probably late 1800s, I would say. I did a little bit of research about Shanghaiing, which I knew it was a term, and I knew it was a thing that happened, but I wasn't all that familiar with. And I'll explain that real quick. There were a few rules in the United States government that kind of required people that were to serve on ships to stay there until the end of the ship, right? So when they came on the ship, they were bound by law to serve throughout the entire voyage. So if it was like a 6-month voyage, they had to stay on the ship for 6 months. Otherwise, they would go to jail or worse. And as a result, there was like a whole criminal industry that arose to get people on these ships because people would be paid by the body to place sailors on ships, right? Labor was low because this would have been shortly after the gold rush. So, you know, everyone was trying to find gold out west and there weren't still a lot of people out there. So people were being kidnapped and placed on ships and kind of forced to serve these contracts on the ships. And the term is Shanghaiing. In this book, we have Red, who is the person that was Shanghaied, and she was placed on the ship. She is there for 3 years and finally ends up, with the help of some of these other people that were Shanghaied into serving on the ship, ends up killing the captain and the whole crew and take over the ship. And ultimately, this is very much a revenge story, right? So in this issue, we see her get revenge for being placed on the ship against her will. And, you know, she takes that out on the crew. But we do learn a lot about her background, a lot about who she is and what she's about. You know, when she takes over the ship with this mutiny, everybody that helps her is okay with helping her because, you know, they also want to be free. But then they're like, why should we keep you as leader? Like, why don't we just throw you overboard? And she's like, look, I don't care about any of this crap. She's like, take the captain's gold. Like, I don't care about it. Money's all yours. I don't even want the captain's quarters. Like, you guys can have that. I'll go sleep downstairs and, you know, at the bottom of the ship. And I'll sleep on the floor. Like, I don't care about any of that. I just wanted to get out of the ship, and I want to get back to my family. And she's got a mom and a daughter who she's been separated for you know, years. And we learned a lot about her, how she was raised, her background. It was her and another sister. They were raised by their parents. And because they had no male children, the parents raised her to be kind of head of the household. So her dad taught her how to fight. They taught her how to shoot. They taught her how to hunt. And as a result, she gained a lot of skills that at this time a woman would not typically have. And I love that because like Red is a super strong character. And you know, that's really important in particular with this era where women were still expected to just be at home raising kids or cooking or, you know, whatever else. Red has the skills that a man would possess at this time. And, you know, the funny thing is throughout all these years that she was on the ship, nobody on the ship knew she was a woman. She always pretended to be a man. And of course it worked out because of the skills she had. Nobody even assumed, right? She had short hair. She, you know, wore her sailor's jacket. So, you know, even then she's not very voluptuous, right? She doesn't have like white hips and huge boobs or whatever. So like nobody could tell. And, you know, after she's freed from this, she reveals that she's a woman. They're like, oh my God, like we can't follow a woman. And she's like, look, I kicked everybody's ass. If you can't follow me, like that sucks for you. But this is what I'm doing. You can come with me or I'll kick your ass too. And that was freaking awesome to see. You know, I love strong characters and Red is a fantastic lead character for this book because her motivations are awesome as well, right? She doesn't care about any of this stuff. All she wants to do is go back home to her family. And I loved it. Chris Sabella just finished a run on Cold War over Aftershock, which I thought was brilliant as well. And it was very different from a lot of things that I read. In some respects, it was a little hard to follow because there's so much the characters don't know, and as a result, the readers don't know. With Shanghai Red, all that's kind of thrown out the window. You pretty much know exactly what you're getting with this book in this first issue, and I think that makes for a fantastic introduction to a series that I think will end up being really strong and maybe one of the best books of 2018. Of course, it's hard to tell with just one issue, but it's so strong, and everybody's so fleshed out, in particular Red. And of course, we learn that she wants to get back to Portland to find the people that Shanghai'd her and kill them as well before she can be reunited with her family. Overall, Shanghai Red is just absolutely brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. It's very dark and gritty, and it fits with the atmosphere of the book, with the themes of the book. Art is also beautiful, so I cannot recommend Shanghai Red enough. I know a lot of you already read the book and were talking to me about it on Twitter a little bit. If you have not picked this up, very, very highly recommended. That is Shanghai Red number 1 from Image Comics. The final thing I want to talk about is not a new book, but it is something I want to recommend. So I was on Twitter yesterday and I sent out a message. I was like, I'm looking for H.P. Lovecraft adaptations of books in comic book format. If anybody has any ideas, let me know. And a few people chimed in, so I want to thank Money Bolis and Jay Forgets and How to Make Comics for sending me some recommendations that I picked up, and I'll be reading probably some of them this week into the next week. But as I was doing these searches, I went on Comixology and I found Harold, Lovecraft and Tesla, Volume 1. There are 3 volumes of this book. It is also an Action Lab book, by the way. So this is one of the reasons why Action Lab is really on my radar right now. There's 3 volumes. Each are $4.99. Each is about 80 pages. And if you have Comixology Unlimited, they are free to borrow on Unlimited. So if you have that, if you're paying $5.99 on Unlimited, then I recommend you put these on your cart and check them out because they're free to you. And if you don't have Unlimited, then let me recommend you get Unlimited because $5.99 for thousands of books is a fantastic deal. This is, of course, an Action Lab book. It's written by John Reilly with pencils by Tom Rogers, inks by Dexter Weeks, and colors also by Dexter Weeks. And this follows the antics of H.P. Lovecraft and Nikola Tesla, 2 people who I really enjoy in real life. I love reading about them. I love their work. And, this was something that seemed really up my alley. And I started reading it, and I was really impressed. One thing that I posted on Twitter was that if you're a fan of Rough Riders from Aftershock, you probably dig this. And the premise is very different, but this kind of alternate history based somewhat on reality is something that really works for me. I love alt history stuff. And this is kind of what this is. The book kicks off with Amelia Earhart going on her famous journey to try to cross the ocean, and she disappears. And part of the reason she disappears is that she is engaged to Nikola Tesla, and he has put this experimental engine on her plane, and somehow or other he realizes as he's doing experiments on it and calculations that she may have gone into another dimension because of the engine on her plane. And she needs to figure out how to get her back and wants people with expertise. So he goes to the patent office and talks to Albert Einstein, which of course at the time would have been working at the patent office. And so that was cool to see him there. He meets this guy who's trying to file patents for this mechanical belt who points him to Lovecraft. So he goes to find Lovecraft, who he thinks is a scientist, until he learns he's a writer, but also somebody that has magical powers. And I loved Lovecraft in this book. He is the comedic relief. The tension and the relationship between Lovecraft and Tesla is fantastic because Tesla is very much a man of science and Lovecraft very much a man of magic. And so they have very different viewpoints on life. And Lovecraft's mom is in this book because he lives with his mom at home, and she hates that he's a writer, but, you know, they come from a long tradition of magicians, I guess, so she does magic as well, and she manifests this, like, crab octopus creature to attack them and destroy Lovecraft's typewriter. And, you know, this is when Tesla's like, what the hell's happening with this place? Maybe this guy's not just a hack writer. Like, he may actually know something about magic in other dimensions. So they go on this journey. They end up going to see Lovecraft's professor in school who pretends to not know him, but he actually does know him. That all leads to this Cult of Cthulhu that's trying to find the Necronomicon, which readers of Lovecraft may be familiar with. A very powerful book to try to summon Cthulhu into our world. That whole thing was amazing. We don't get a resolution to where Amelia is, but there's so many characters pop in. You know, like Aleister Crowley is mentioned. He doesn't show up, but he is mentioned, and he may be part of this Cult of Cthulhu. Who else shows up on here? I said Crowley, Amelia Earhart, Einstein. I don't know. There's so many characters. Harry Houdini shows up, and he's a bigger part of the story in Volume 2. I love this book so much. It's not a perfect book, so let me say that. The art isn't really my favorite art style, but I think it works for this book very well, so I can't knock it for that. The story pacing is a little weird at times. Like I had a tough time figuring out why some panels were putting a page or why one panel flowed to the next in a particular way. But overall, as a package, I thought it was really strong. And, you know, I didn't expect anything from this book because I knew nothing about it, but I was so impressed with it. I recommended it on social yesterday. And I think there's at least a couple of you that are going to pick it up. But it's really fun, you know. And I love books where I can have fun reading it and not have a care in the world. And I think Harold, Lovecraft, and Tesla is one of those things. I borrowed all three volumes of this. You know, I think I may end up buying these in trade as well because I really enjoyed them that much. So very much highly recommend Harold, Lovecraft, and Tesla from Action Lab. I think originally this came out in 2015, 2016, so it's not a brand new book. But again, if you have Unlimited, it's free, so why not check it out? I'm going to give this a 4 out of 5. I thought it was a lot of fun, and I can't wait to get to the end of Volume 3. That is going to wrap this episode of Comic Talk Today. I want to thank you all again for listening. Thank you all for the feedback on Twitter and email, etc. It's a pleasure to do this podcast, and it's really nice to have such a large group of people chatting with me about the crazy stuff that I do on here. There's a lot of feedback that came in on the Top 5 Dead Universes episode that I put out on Saturday, so thank you all for that. I figured it might touch a note for a lot of you. There were some corrections, so I want to thank those of you that corrected me in a few things. I know, like, Mike, for example, was talking about the strangers being the cable car people, not the Ultra Force, and I don't remember what I said, so I'm going to trust you, Mike, and say you're right, and I was wrong. How about that? Tomorrow I'll be back with, of course, the Comic Predictor and the news. Wednesday we'll do a rant. Thursday my guest is going to be Colin Lawler. He has been doing this comic on Webtoons for a while. It's called Spirits, and they have a Kickstarter going on, so I want to talk to him about the Kickstarter, which I did back. It's a great story. I started reading the Webtoon, and I backed it solely based on his art style. It almost reminded me of that cartoon, The Boondocks, that was out, I don't know, years ago, 5-10 years ago. Really, really dug it. And, it's a sort of like a mystery, magical thing. I don't know. It's weird, but I'm really digging it. So Colin will be my guest on Thursday. Friday, I'll be premiering a new segment, which, is going to be called Secret Origins, apparently. So thanks to, whoever suggested that. I wish I remember who it was, but thanks for suggesting that. I'm not going to talk about what it is yet. I think a lot of you will enjoy Secret Origins when that pops up on Friday. If you want to get in touch with me, you can, of course, reach me at GeekVine on Twitter. nerdylegion@gmail.com is the email address. I think that's it. Until then, go read some comics.